Hello, and welcome to What the Tech, a podcast brought to you by ProServe IT. In March, we are revisiting cybersecurity. In this episode, we will take a deep dive into protecting against phishing scams and identity theft. As the digital world continues to expand, so do the threats that seek to exploit their vulnerabilities. That's why we're here to give you the insights and strategies to protect your digital space. In today's episode, we'll explore what phishing attacks are, how they work, and most importantly, how to defend against them. By the end of this episode, you'll have a deeper understanding of how hackers can bypass multi-factor authentication, the role of conditional access policies, Microsoft Intune, and many more defense tactics.
My name is George Abasamra. I'll be your instructor today. I'm a principal consultant and security practice lead here at ProServe IT. So in today's class, we'll be talking about protecting yourself against phishing scams and identity theft. So what are phishing scams? And do you have what it takes to detect a phishing attempt? Do you have what it takes to protect yourself, your organization, and your data from hackers? And one thing that hackers need access to your environment is your identity. What easier way and better way to do so than phishing? So what I plan on getting out of today's session is to help everyone understand the implications of not protecting your environment well enough, especially from an identity perspective. Some might think that having multi-factor authentication or MFA is enough to block identity-based attacks, especially the ones that come from phishing. We'll help uncover all these answers to all these questions within the course today. So for the agenda, first, we're gonna start off with an overview to define phishing scams and identity theft. We'll first talk about why they're a growing threat. We'll also highlight types of phishing attacks with some examples. Then we'll talk about how to identify phishing scams and explain the different types of phishing scams we see and some tips on how to recognize them. We'll then go through a phishing demo to show you how easy it is to be phished for credentials, even with multi-factor authentication. We will then discuss best practices for protecting against phishing scams, from strategies to avoiding falling for them to the technology that you need to deploy as well. Then we will discuss what to do if you suspect you've fallen for a phishing scam, including steps to take to mitigate the risks. So what is a phishing attack? Now, phishing is a type of cyber attack in which an attacker tries to trick a victim into giving up sensitive information. Now, in this case, it's the user's digital identities tied to your email address and password. And for the majority of phishing attacks, it's to impersonate or elicit information or money from a target. Now, I'm sure most, if not all of you, have received some sort of phishing email in the past, whether that be a poorly crafted one with lots of spelling mistakes and anomalies, or a perfectly crafted one that could fool anyone. At the end of the day, the technology you invest in can protect you to a certain degree, but you have to rely on your users to make that judgment eventually, that second line of defense. That said, those digital identities that you use in your corporate account and personal account might share that same credential or same information. So hackers might want to phish you for your personal account to gain access into your corporate account. Some of you might say, we have multi-factor authentication to help protect our accounts and digital identities. With what we're going to go through today during the session, I can guarantee you that even with MFA, it's not enough anymore. You have to secure the access at the resource itself. And we'll give you some options later on in this webinar. So there's a lot of types of phishing attacks. They might be different in name and technique, but at the end of the day, they are all after your credentials to be able to access sensitive information. The first one we're going to talk about is deceptive phishing. In this type of attack, the attackers send a message that appears to be from a legitimate source, such as your bank, social media site, or email provider, but is actually a fake designed to steal your information. Now, this type of phishing is not really targeted towards anyone, but just hoping someone would fall for it and click on that malicious link. Now, if you take a look at this example here on the screen, this is a PayPal phishing attempt. So you can obviously see that this is a quick confirmation that you've added a new email address, jeffreyhoving@outlook.com. It's going to trigger some things right away internally to say, wait, that's not me. I'm not Jeffrey. So let me click on this link to update my account. Now you can quickly spot a lot of spelling mistakes here. Email did not originate from PayPal, some sorelease.com. There's customer@live.com as a general customer that it was sent to. And if you hover your link on top of the update my account, it takes you to a link tree domain, which is not associated with PayPal. So all these are indicators to say, this is not a legitimate email. I should not click on this. So this is just a simple type of deceptive phishing. You're not really a target. They mass send these to people just to fool somebody. If they get one person, it's a successful phishing attempt for them. The next one is spear phishing. Now, this is a more of a targeted attack, more of a targeted form of phishing, in which the attacker targets specific individuals or organizations, often using information collected from social media profiles, public records, your website, or other sources. Now, the spear phishing technique, you can see here an example from GoDaddy, which is a domain hosting provider. You can easily tell whether a domain is hosted with GoDaddy or some other provider out there. In this case, whoever the target of this phishing email was, they're targeting GoDaddy. They know this domain is registered with GoDaddy, so they might as well target this organization, knowing the information they were able to capture about them, with a GoDaddy simple email. Just saying, click here to make sure that you are the account holder. If you're not, your account will be limited permanently. So they're playing on your emotion here a little bit. I don't want my account to be limited. Let me click on this link, provide my credentials to GoDaddy, and now the access will be granted to the hackers. The next one is clone phishing. Now, this type of attack involves creating a replica of a legitimate email, but with malicious links or attachments added. Now, the attacker may use a compromised email account to send the cloned message, making it more convincing, or even purchase a domain that is similar to the real domain to make their attack look more believable. Now, you can see here, there's a company called Valley Mail that is used for spoof protection, for SPF, DKIM, and DMARC validation. And if you quickly just take a look at this email, it's created exactly as the Valley Mail email would come through. The only difference is, about the domain here, it says Valley Nail. So there's two N's instead of an M. Somebody purchased a domain that looks like Valley Mail, and in this case, they're trying to impersonate this domain or phish other users to providing their credentials to Valley Mail. This email is a clone phishing attempt. The email looks exactly like Valley Mail would send it. If you hover your cursor on top of the links there, it's not a legitimate link, especially with the domain being Valley Nail and not Valley Mail. The next one is whaling. Now, whaling is a form of spear phishing, so it is a targeted attack, but it targets high-level executives or other important individuals in an organization, often with the goal of stealing valuable information or initiating a larger-scale attack. Now, an example could be something similar that happened with the social media platform Snapchat in 2016. A high-ranking employee fell for a CEO fraud email and revealed employees' payroll information. Now, that's just your payroll information, but what other details can they take? Your bank details, your social security or social insurance numbers, your addresses, so on and so forth. All those could be compromised in this case. Now, this is an example of a whaling attempt. So, like I said earlier, this is a pending payment, and the beneficiary is waiting to receive payment. So this is coming from their CEO, quote unquote. They've created a Hotmail account. In this case, it's just co.webmail, but the name is there. So if the user did not notice the actual email, they might not understand. You're getting an email from your CEO. They're probably going to act on that, knowing that this is their president or the CEO of the company. So just proceed with the wire transfer. I'll get all the documents as soon as I'm available. They're saying here that they're not available at the moment, to just perform the wire transfer, send the funds, in this case, to the hacker's account, and pretending like they're busy. So they can't respond to their emails. They can't respond to whether this is an actual legitimate or not email. Then there's smishing. So this involves using text messages to trick victims into providing sensitive information, often by directing them to a fake website or asking them to call a phone number. Now, some smishing techniques you might have heard of or experienced are similar to this example with Canada Post. Your package has not been delivered, or others tying you to maybe the Canadian government or the CRA saying, you owe money, or maybe there's money that needs to be deposited into your account. So smishing is one of the ways that is extremely effective, because it's more difficult to hover your cursor over a link on your phone to determine whether this link has been hidden or not, or whether this link is actually legitimate or not. So this is one of the examples of smishing here you can see on the screen. Canada Post, your package couldn't be delivered. Click here to follow instructions. They're also playing on your emotions, like, I'm expecting a package. Or, wait, I ordered something and I did not get it delivered. Let me click on that link to see what I need to do to get that delivered to me. And last but not least, phishing. Now, again, these are just some examples of phishing attacks. There are others, but just some of the most common ones that we see. Now, phishing, or voice phishing, This is similar to smishing, but involves using voice calls instead of text messages. Now, obviously, I'm not going to be able to play a voice call here in this case, but I've just drawn up an example here. So let's just say there's a cyber criminal posing as a help desk agent. So maybe you have an IT company, an IT department. That hacker is pretending to be part of your IT department. They find the victim's phone number somehow, some way. They give them a call and they say, there's some suspicious activities happening on your account. Or maybe there's a virus on your computer, or whatever the case may be. And they trick the victim into logging in and downloading that remote software. It could be TeamViewer, it could be any kind of remote management tool that the users can install on their machines. So the victim in this case downloads the remote management software and the hacker logs in and puts in their malicious code within it. Now the hacker has full control over the victim's device. So this is called vishing, where it involves voice calls instead of text messages, and it can trick a lot of people into providing access to their machines if they're not well aware. So these are some of the types of phishing attacks. Now, how can you identify phishing scams? First and foremost, you want to check the sender's email address to make sure it's legitimate. Check for spelling mistakes. Check for domains that may look similar to the real domain, but it's not actually that domain. Check hover over links before clicking. So you want to make sure that before clicking on anything, first you're expecting this email, and you hover your cursor on top of the link just to make sure whatever the link says is actually where it's directing you to, and take a look at the domains within the links that are being sent. You want to call the person to verify, but don't use the number found in the email. A lot of times we see hackers putting in their own throwaway number or their own virtual number that they can just get rid of easily as part of the subject line, or sorry, as part of the signature. So they trick you into wanting to call them, maybe to gain access to your computer, but never call the person. If you're suspecting an email to be suspicious, never call them in the number found in their signature. Try to look them up, try to find other means to give them a call, just to make sure you've covered your bases there. And don't use your cell phone to check suspicious emails. So if you're out and about, you receive an email, it seems enticing, you want to click on the link, but it sounds suspicious, wait until you get home, wait until you get to the office, until you get on an actual laptop or computer where you can hover your cursor on top of a link. Look for grammatical errors or typos, but not always. So a lot of times we see just regular phishing emails with a lot of spelling mistakes, a lot of typos, a lot of grammatical errors, but that's not always an indicator. You can always have a perfectly crafted email come through that is determined as phishing. But the majority of them do have grammatical errors or typos. You want to be suspicious of urgent language, anything that plays on the sense of urgency. You have one day to click on this link before it expires. You have to do this by this time, otherwise this is going to happen, right? So they want you to act on it. They want you to click on links. They want to do things urgently so that they can gain access to your account as well. And if it's too good to be true, it probably is. If you receive an email saying you've won a $100 gift card, click this link to claim it, or whatever the case may be, how often do people win just randomly? So you want to make sure it's a legitimate source, it's a legitimate prize prior to clicking on the link and providing your credentials. Even if you do end up clicking on the link, make sure that whatever URL is stated there is the actual legitimate URL for this company. Now, it's not always the case. There's been a recent activities tied to Walmart, for example, where they're using the Walmart domain for phishing campaigns due to some vulnerability that they had. So it's not always an indicator, but it can also help you identify if it's a phishing scam or not. And last but not least, use technology to help, such as Microsoft Defender for Office 365, which has phishing capabilities, phishing detection capabilities, impersonation protection capabilities, something we call safe links. Even if a link is malicious and people click on it, it can block them from accessing it. And like I mentioned, at the end of the day, you can have all the technology deployed, but your users are that next layer of defense, and end user education goes along. Now, how can we protect ourselves against these types of phishing scams? All right, so all these phishing scams, all these techniques that I'm about to talk about will help bypass or protect you against bypassing MFA. First and foremost, using geofencing. So you can create something called conditional access policies that say from where you're allowed to sign in from, what IP address, what country, so on and so forth. So let's just say this hacker was from Russia and they're able to sign in, then that policy is going to block them. If you do have a policy that allows you to sign in from Canada, for example, and the hacker is signing in from Canada, then this policy is not going to take effect. We have to figure out other methods to do so. Which brings me to my next point. Enrolling your device into Microsoft Intune. So whether that be your mobile phone, or whether that be your corporate laptop or your BYOD device, you can enroll that device into Microsoft Intune as a mobile device management solution. And within conditional access, you can create a policy that says, only allow people to access my tenant, access the data, access the email from an Intune enrolled and compliant device. So even if a hacker tries to sign in, trying to bypass MFA, they're not on a corporate device. They need to have that corporate device that's Intune enrolled and also compliant with your policies. Another one is hybrid domain join. Similar to Microsoft Intune, but you're setting the policy to be allow them in if their device is joined to my local domain, if you do have domain controllers, and is also joined with Azure AD, with your Microsoft tenant. So that way you know that this is a corporate issued device. It might not be Intune enrolled, but you know for a fact that this device is domain joined. It's connected to your domain, it's connected to Azure AD, and they're allowed in. Otherwise, you're not allowed in. Another one is to use something called certificate-based authentication. Now, there are multiple ways we can achieve this. One example is using something called Defender for Cloud Apps, which is a Microsoft solution. It's a CASB solution to proxy your authentication directly through Microsoft. And it's another way that you won't be able to allow hackers in even if they attempt to bypass MFA, because the proxying is done by Microsoft and is being monitored by Microsoft in the back end. You can also invest in Defender for 365. Now, like I mentioned earlier, there's safe links, safe attachments, impersonation protection, improving your Exchange Online Protection solution, which is your first line of defense, message hygiene perspective. Your users are your next line of defense, but let's have technology try to attempt to block them first. That said, you can block phishing emails from coming through, or if it was not weaponized originally, but then became weaponized after the email was sent, to try and evade all the technology that you have in place. At least if you click on the link, it might block it. And there's also a feature called ZAP, Zero Hour Auto Purge, where if that email was received to your mailbox, it was not able to scan it because it was not weaponized, Microsoft can zap that email out of your inbox to help protect you. There's also an impersonation protection component to this as well, where you might want to add your high-profile C-suite users there. If somebody creates a Gmail account with your CEO's name or your director of finance name, trying to impersonate them, at least it's either going to be blocked or there's going to be some sort of warning sign to let the users know, make sure you're expecting an email from this user. It looks like it's an impersonation attempt. And last but not least is end user awareness training and phishing simulations. For whatever reason, suspicious emails will pass through the cracks. I can guarantee you that. But the users are that next line of defense. So it's extremely important to let and train those users on how to identify suspicious emails and also go through phishing simulations regularly, because that keeps things on top of mind. They're aware that we have regular phishing simulations, phishing trainings, and learn how to detect these phishing emails so that we don't fall for them in the future. And also learning about the different types of phishing attempts. So whether that be somebody sending you an email saying, hey, I approve this invoice, pay it up, which we've seen a lot of people do, or whether it's just a random attack, you just happen to be a recipient of those emails. What steps should you take if you suspect you've been phished? Now, first and foremost, you'd obviously want to reset the user's password immediately. By doing so, you're kicking the hacker out, or at least not kicking the hacker out, but at least you know that if they attempt to sign in again, they're not going to be able to because the password's changed. But they're not going to be kicked out until you revoke their access in Azure AD. So you have to go in and kick them out using Azure AD, whether that be through PowerShell or be through the Microsoft tenant. There's a button in there that says revoke access. That means you're forcing the user to re-authenticate. But in this case, they're re-authenticating using the new password and not the old one. That way, for sure, you know that the hacker has been kicked out. You want to check and remove any suspicious email forwarding addresses. So one thing we've noticed whenever a user is compromised, the hacker might create an inbox rule that says, or a forwarding rule that says, all emails coming to this email address, automatically forward them to my hacker@gmail.com account. Just so that way they can keep track of all the emails going back and forth and try to ring as little alarm bells as they can. You want to then disable suspicious inbox rules. Similar to what we mentioned about email forwarding, there might be an inbox rule that's forwarding emails, or another inbox rule that might say, mark all these emails as read as they come through so that the user is not notified on their Outlook client or on their mobile device. Move them to the RSS feeds folder or to the conversation history folder or some other folder in your inbox that's not monitored, or your mailbox that's not monitored. And that way you're not going to get notified as well on your phone or your Outlook. So if a hacker's in your mailbox sending malicious emails from your mailbox, they want those replies also to be marked as read, moved to a different folder, and then they can run their tools to delete those emails from the first stage recycling bin and then the second stage recycling bin as well. Attempt to hide their tracks. You want to also check if a user was added to some sort of administrative group. So if this was some sort of admin account that was compromised and they have access to adding other users to administrative groups, you want to validate that as well. You want to look through the logs to see everything this person's done within that mailbox, within that account. Because adding them to an administrative group could be another way that they can get themselves back in. They might have created a new user and that user was added to this administrative group. You also want to check if there were additional devices registered under the account. So yes, MFA is enabled. Maybe self-service password reset is enabled. You want to see whether the hacker has changed those devices or changed the methods of resetting your password. Because if they did reset their password as a step one, the hacker might be able to come back in and reset their password again because they changed those methods. They changed the questions. They changed the phone number attached or the device used for MFA. And you also want to check on the sent emails using your Exchange Online Message Trace capabilities. You want to see what the hacker has done, what emails were sent, to whom were they sent, so you can go back and inform them. There might be a phishing link in that email. You want to make sure that they don't click on things. Now, there are additional ways to help as well after the fact. Preferably, if you want to be proactive, there are certain things you have to enable prior. Something called litigation hold in Exchange Online, or most recently, it's called retention policies within your tenant. So you can create retention policies to retain all emails, all content within SharePoint and OneDrive and Teams. So if the hacker was in your environment, deleting emails, deleting documents, deleting content, you can always retrieve those because you have a retention policy enabled. And as you go through your investigation, you can eventually figure out what emails were sent, what emails were deleted, and take action if needed be. All right.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of What the Tech, sponsored by ProServe IT. Today, we delved into the world of phishing attacks and identity theft. We've learned about what these attacks are, how hackers attempt to bypass multi-factor authentication, and the importance of conditional access policies. Moreover, we discussed the importance of end-user awareness and key steps to take when suspecting a phishing attack. Next week, we will navigate through the fascinating realm of artificial intelligence in our episode titled The Good and Bad of Artificial Intelligence in Cybersecurity. We'll unravel the potential of AI in the cybersecurity landscape, its strengths in detecting and responding to threats, but also the potential risks that it poses. We'll also discuss real-life scenarios to illustrate what could happen when AI is leveraged in cybersecurity. Remember, knowledge is power, so stay informed and stay secure. Tune in next week for another enlightening episode. Until then, stay safe online.